Hey everyone, I'm Jason V, and this is Local Color. For many of us, hobbies are things we do in our downtime. They help us unwind from a long day at work or allow us to flex our creative muscles. For Shannon Wallace, her hobby is a lifelong passion cultivated by a friendship that ended in tragedy. Growing up in Baltimore, Shannon never stayed in one place for too long. High school and college were difficult times for Shannon, and we discussed those difficulties along with hip-hop, camera hardware, and her lackluster feelings towards HBCUs in the United States.
What part of Baltimore are you from? What was it like growing up for you here?
You know, it was all right. I'm from Northeast Baltimore, my sister and I.
Northeast, what part? What street?
Shadyside. We live right off of Lock Raven, down the street from Morgan.
Yeah, my aunt lives in Northeast on off of Burnwood.
Burnwood?
Yeah.
Where is that? Is that closer to Hartford Road?
Actually, it's literally like right around the corner from Morgan. If you go straight up, Lock Raven.
Yeah.
It's like three streets behind Good Samaritan.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, by Belvedere.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's actually parallel. Uh-huh. But the blocks are so long.
Those blocks
are like so long.
Right. Well, what about you? What part of Baltimore are you from?
East Baltimore, actually Darley and Hartford Road.
Darley, is that north, like further north or south?
It's like east, like beginning east. It's right by Broadway. It's right by the courthouse on North Avenue.
Oh, okay.
Hartford Road, where the Walgreens is.
I'm trying to think. Is there that restaurant? Isn't there that restaurant, The Gift?
I have no clue.
Okay. you said Hartford Road.
Yep. So
near Broadway.
And you know where the courthouse is on North Avenue, Hartford Road.
That's near the Department of Education.
Like social services, and the Department of Education is the Board of Education, which is on like further down North Avenue. It's not that far from there, but it's not around there though.
Okay, but it's closer towards Hartford Road, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
we're right. Hartford Road and 25th.
Okay, I know
you're a real Northeaster then.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Okay, cool. So if you go down, if you go up. Like the park or whatever is on the right hand side, and then you can make the left onto, what's it called? You can make the left onto, I can't remember the road, but you can get to Lake Montebello that way from Hartford Road.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
And you've lived there all your life?
Actually, no. I lived a lot of places. Me and my mom, we bounced around a lot. We lived in Section 8 and stuff. So we lived in Garrison and Oford, which is Park Heights. We lived in O'Donnell Heights, which is like, outdone, dog. It was miserable out there.
You didn't like it?
Absolutely. I hated it because it's like Cherry Hill. It's so out of the way. It's so like its own forgotten, you know, community.
Yeah.
It was nothing out there. Like the store was like a mile away and it was this crappy old grocery store. And we had a McDonald's and a Travel Plaza, which is now, I think, like some club or something, but it sucked out there.
The Travel Plaza. So that's near like O'Donnell Street and 95 and stuff.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I lived on North Avenue in Rosedale. I lived a lot of places, but my home has really always been off of Darley because my grandparents lived there for like 60 years.
Are they still there now?
No, my grandparents are actually deceased, but I lived there until like 2011, I want to say 2012.
Okay, and then most recently, now you're on...
I live in Columbia, Howard County now.
Oh, you see that floor? Okay. Okay.
I'm moving back here, though. Uh-huh. I went out there just to get away. Sometimes you just got to, like, you know, the
remove
city...
Yourself
yeah,
from,
remove yourself.
From whatever's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know about that.
So that's what I did.
What about coming up and in school? Did you like school?
Absolutely not.
Why not?
I like school for the social environment. For my friends, especially high school, because I went to Edmondson, which is Old West, so I had to travel, and I knew a different types of people. I didn't really know too many people in the Edmondson Village area.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it for social reasons, but far as like school, I hated it. I dealt with a principal and an English teacher who were homophobic, my Spanish teacher as well. And it's like growing up now, like being an adult, I kind of realized some of the wrong stuff that they done, you know, like not suspending you in the correct way, like, you know, just treating you certain ways. I just realized that so much of the stuff that schools shouldn't do. Mm-hmm. But I didn't realize that in school, but I just didn't like school. I didn't like what I was learning. I didn't feel connected to it. Everything is about like being connected, you know, and I didn't feel connected to the history. I didn't like the teachers, and it was just bad, because I remember in middle school, it was like 35 of us in one class. And it's like, how are you supposed to learn? You know, even in high school, the teachers just was collecting checks and the whole nine yards. Like, I didn't like school at all. And plus, I just feel like they're hiding stuff and they try to make you comply. And when you don't comply, it's a problem. You know, right. They don't really care about your creativity and your expression. They just kind of want you to remove as robots and just listen to whatever they say. So I didn't like school at all.
Yeah, I gotcha.
And college was college.
Where'd you go to college?
I went to Bowie State University. I didn't like it. I was an athlete at first.
What
basketball.
Sport? Oh, basketball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I went to BCCC, Baltimore City Community College. We went like went defeated, won two championships. We did really well. So I went to Bowie to play, and I didn't like the team. I didn't like the school. I just felt like it was just literally 13th grade.
The extension of all that shit that you had to put up with.
Exactly.
Before.
And then it's like, what made it even worse was college. In college, it's like, you have the athletes who don't really know anything, who just get by just because they're athletes. And even though I was one, I didn't get treated like an athlete, you know, in school. I didn't like how the teachers just, they just dumbed down their curriculum for lazy students, you know. I just didn't like what Bowie was giving me, so I just kind of commuted and got in and got out. Really didn't have too many friends besides the people that I were in classes with, but mm-hmm. I didn't really like it at all, because you kind of see the disparities between traditional white institutions and then historically black colleges. And
Kondwani was talking about that when I interviewed him. He went to Virginia State.
Yeah, we talked about it not too long ago, because he went to Virginia State, and he was like, yo, you know, I was like, I'm pretty sure that it seemed like you had a better college experience than I did, because I didn't like it at all. Mm-hmm. It seemed like you did like, and you participated in events and you was part of a fraternity. So it seemed like that you had a better experience. But he was like, yeah, I did, but I didn't still, you know, I can just tell that it just wasn't what it should be or what the potential of a historically black college could be.
Right. Yeah, now, so, do you feel, as somebody who went to a HBCU, and I didn't ask him this, but I want to ask you now, do you feel like a lot of HBCUs just kind of live in the shadow of Howard, and Howard is the, quote, standard of what a HBCU could be?
If this was like 5 years ago, I could have said, yeah, but now Howard is actually losing its gift, or its reputation isn't what it used to be. I just think that with historically black colleges, we're just not prepared to compete with white institutions. I don't think that the equity is there. Like, the resources aren't there. The demographic, of course, is different, but the demographic of teachers is also different. I think that with like underfunding and things of that nature, that teachers don't really care too much, which makes the students not really care. So it's just like a domino effect of everyone just like, I'm just not going to put this much effort into it. And
right.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel some type of way about historically black colleges. I think that they're necessary, but at the same time, if we're going to have those institutions, we need to make sure that they can compete, you know, that they are up to par, because what you learn in your freshman year is already expired by your junior year. And that's something that we need to attack and, you know, and fix.
Okay. Well, I can say, as a black person that went to a predominantly white institution, I graduated from Stevenson. I liked it. And I was also a commuter student, so I kind of know how you feel with not being as connected to campus life and school.
Yeah, and
spirit.
You want that, you know, like, it's college, yeah. You kind of want to be connected, but if you just don't feel invited or even mm-hmm. feel interested, it's like, What's you know, I'm point? Not, yeah, I'm not losing anything.
Yeah. When I was at Stevenson, I graduated in 2011 and I started going there in 2008, I think. I think every year that I kept going back, there was more and more black people, but then I don't think there was a, like a ASA or a BSA, or was it BSU, like student union, black mm-hmm. student? Okay. There wasn't one of them, I think, until after I graduated. And I was happy to see that, but, you know, maybe if there was something like that for me when I was there, I would have felt more invited to the school.
True.
And also a lot of my friends from high school went to Stevenson. So for me, I didn't really have to make as many friends because I already knew people there. And that's part of the reason why I went there. But sometimes I think about how my college experience would have been different if I went to an HBCU. But now that I'm out of college and I've interacted with people from HBCUs, I feel like there's like, I don't, you know, want to generalize or lump them into categories, but there's like the person that went to the HBCU to learn how to interact with white people mm-hmm. and other people in the world. And then there's those who come out of the HBCU and I feel like the education that they got or the information that they got from their education was that white people were evil.
I do think that going to a HBCU is totally different than going to a white institution because the feel and the atmosphere and the environment, you know, is totally different. It's like certain atmospheres at Boyd that I don't think that I could have experienced at Stevenson.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, HBCUs are like totally pro-black, and that pro-blackness you don't really have at schools like Stevenson or schools like Towson. I mean, you do, right. But it's not like, it's very, you know, rare.
Right.
You know?
That message of pro-blackness doesn't come with the package of going to that school.
True.
It's like, you know, we're happy that you're black, but at the end of the day, like, this is, we're not specifically trying to, like, I don't want to say they don't care that we succeed, but it's like, we want everybody to succeed, like,
yeah.
Black, white, whatever, but then black schools are like, we want black kids to
yeah.
be the best.
Yeah, and then that attitude sometimes, that's a great attitude, but in a historically black college, you want me to succeed, but you're not giving me the preparation that I need. I am trying to have a career, you know, after I graduate, but I don't even have the basic skills right now. You know, and that was one thing that I struggled with in school, which is why I didn't like college like that, because we would get so many group projects and we would get so many like projects. And it was like people who didn't have the basic skill level couldn't contribute to the project. So it's like, okay, so what do I do? Do I tell on them, tell my teacher, or do I do the work?
Yeah.
And it's like, at this point, teachers want to see you succeed regardless if you know it or not. They're like, yo, you got to add to the statistics. You got to graduate. So I'm going to get you there, but I'm not going to teach you the things that you need to know in order to mm-hmm. really get there without me just giving you a buy. And that's something that I saw tremendously at Boyd. You know, people who didn't come to class but would have an A. And I'm like, yo, like,
what's the point?
You know, like, what? Yeah, really. Like, really, what's the point?
Was it your time at Boyd that you got interested in photography?
I was always interested in photography. My grandparents raised me and they spoiled me, so they gave me everything I wanted. I had a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
I had a harmonica. I had a camera. And I didn't have like a point and shoot, but I had a video camera and it was huge. And I used to play fetch with my cat. I used to throw this ball in the kitchen and I would record her, and her name was Peppa. She would go get it and I would just like work on my zooms and
mm-hmm.
everything. So they gave me a lot of like artsy stuff, piano, the whole nine yards. So I was always interested. But as I started to get older, working and having a job was kind of like programmed in my head. So I kind of stepped away from that artistic side of me and kind of was like, okay, got to get a job, you know, got to do this, got to do that. So it's like when you kind of like take a different lane of life, you kind of forget about, you know, that artsy side. But I really got into it when I met my friend Storm. And he was somebody that I could connect with because I didn't know anybody taking photos. You know, the people I grew up with weren't taking photos, weren't, you know, writing, reading encyclopedias and stuff like that. They were, you know, just random kids, you know, might play a sport or two. But other than that, nobody really had cameras and computers back then. But when I met him, we really clicked. And I was like, yeah, I like this guy. He's really cool. You know, he taught me a lot. He inspired me a lot, too. But he died being at the wrong place at the wrong time. He got shot up. He was on his friend's porch. And I was just like, yeah, you know, like, I got to keep this going for him. You know, it was an inspiration because I could, you know, create with him. And it's like, you know, I can't create with you, but I can still create and kind of like pay homage to the inspiration that you give me.
Keep that spirit alive.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just kind of just making sure that I've been into it and into it, just trying to find who I am as an artist. And it has happened because I did a lot of like photography at SiriusXM, a lot of photography at, I do different types of photography, but the photography that I enjoy the most is like my art.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I kind of started to gain when I met him.
Okay. Now, with the passing of your friend and his, I guess, the wisdom that he passed on to you, is that part of what informs your creative process?
I will say that he was himself. Like, he was this really tall guy with this bald head and this gap and this, like, beard. And he was always himself, you know, like, he hung with us. Well, we all hung together, and he never cared about what you wore or, you know, if you had a camera, what you could do, you know, like he always informed that you be yourself. And the great thing about that, it was so inspiring to just be around that type of energy, to be around that type of personality that's like, you know, like you're yourself, you are who you are, I can be who I am, you know. So I definitely say that he has helped me, you know, seek inspiration and, you know when I'm being creative and help me figure out, you know, what my lane is and everything. So Storm definitely helped out. I miss him.
Gotcha. Sounds like you two had like a mutual, a mutual respect for one another and a love for the photography.
Yeah. And I met him on a random day. I didn't even know who he was. And he just immediately started talking to me. And I found out he took photos. And from then it was just like, yo, from photos, it was music. From music, it was videos. It was just all types of stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. So I started to blossom as an artist when I met him.
Cool. What kind of music are you into?
I like all types of music.
Everybody says that.
I know, right? I don't like country music and folk music, but I do like Carrie Underwood.
Is she a country artist?
Yes, okay. I do like her.
Oh, what is it about her you like, but not
she just
other?
Has this one song.
Oh.
It's a song about like her like damaging her boyfriend's stuff,
like breaking his actual stuff.
Yeah, like
did he deserve it?
He did deserve it.
Okay.
In the video, he was like cheating on her and stuff.
Oh,
I think.
Oh yeah, that'll
so
do.
So she was like, "I'm going to grab my keys and I'm going to do this." And yeah, it was pretty cool. But I like
Gotcha. Did you want to talk any further about it?
I like Kendrick Lamar.
Who doesn't though?
Some people don't give him the respect and the credit that he deserves.
I think that this is my personal opinion on Kendrick Lamar. I got two of his albums. I got Section 80 and Good Kid, Mad City. And I've listened to part of To Pimp a Butterfly, and I haven't listened to the new unmastered album or whatever. Uh-huh. My opinion on him is that I think Kendrick Lamar is good, but I think that it's been so long since we've had an authentically talented MC that when he came along, people was like, oh my God, he's like the second coming of Christ and all this stuff. I'm like, he's good, but you know, he's still, I think, he has to be in the game for a little bit longer until people start considering him the greatest of all time and stuff, you know?
True. I will say that he's on the road to be the greatest.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, because Section 80 was his first album, which was good. And then Good Kid, Mad City was his second album. And a lot of people, that's where they fall off, kind of like Nas. Illmatic was, Illmatic. I don't think we need to talk about it. But then It Was Written was good, but it's like, didn't have the same stopping power. You know what I mean?
True. But I liked Overly Dedicated, too. Like, I've always liked Kendrick.
So you've been a fan since the beginning.
Yeah. I even saw him in concert before Good Kid, Mad City came out, and it was phenomenal. And I've seen him like plenty of times since. People don't give him his credit, and I do understand that it's a lot to take in because given the circumstances of hip hop now, it's like I'm surprised that we even have people who are even as good as they are. J. Cole, you know, Kendrick. I'm surprised that there we have artists, authentically good artists, you know, musicians and MCs. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, everybody has their opinion about Kendrick, but... And you got to listen to that Pimp a Butterfly, man, because...
I mean, I've listened to a good bit of it. Like, I can't think of any songs now. Like, you know, Black of the Berry, All Right, Hood Politics. What is it? Wesley's Theory or something like that?
Yeah.
And a couple other tracks, but I'll give it a more thorough listen. I like Kendrick, but for me, I listen to much more, like... underground hip hop.
I knew you were about to say that.
Oh, did you?
I knew you were about to say that.
So getting back to photography and your craft, what kind of camera do you use?
So I have more than one camera.
Which one do you use the most?
I use this Canon mirrorless camera a lot because it's smaller.
What does mirrorless mean?
So I wish I brought my camera with me. So DSLRs, the really big cameras, they have mirrors. So what happens is there's a mirror that bounces off of the sensor that creates the photo. And mirrorless, I know it sounds a lot.
I have no idea how cameras work, so that's amazing.
So it's like, so when you take off the lens, mm-hmm. you have a sensor. The sensor is like this square. It could be, some of them are pretty big. Like I have a Sony something. I don't remember the name of it, but it's mirrorless and it's full frame and the sensor is beautiful. It's such a big sensor.
Yeah.
And full frame is like full frame. Some cameras aren't full frame. It's hard to explain when you really don't know how to. You just know how everything goes.
I got you.
But this camera, back to the mirrorless. So the sensor, take the photo. And the photo bounces off of the sensor to the mirror. And that's how the photo is created with cameras that are not mirrorless. But with mirrorless, the photo just comes off of the sensor.
Okay.
And also mirrorless cameras are much smaller. So I work at Best Buy. I've been working there for a long time. So I've been able to like have hands on with cameras.
Mm-hmm.
So you have point and shoots, which are just basic little pocket Sonys,
right.
That you can pull out that don't really have too much going on.
Mm-hmm.
You have compact cameras, which are like in between of DSLRs and point and shoots, but it's more so on a point and shoot. It won't give you too much. Like you can't control the shutter or anything like that. And okay. Then you have mirrorless, which is like compact and DSLR, but lean towards more DSLR. And they're much smaller. And they always have Wi-Fi, which is really good to have. What I need. I need Wi-Fi in a camera.
Amazing to have Wi-Fi in a camera. That's
yeah.
crazy.
And it's so crazy because DSLRs are like the go-to for good photography. But people sleep on compact cameras and mirrorless cameras. Because with most of those cameras, you can still use the DSLR lenses. They just have smaller sensors. But you just got to know how to work your stuff, you know, to produce good stuff. I have a DSLR 60D, which is what I started off with. I like that a lot because it's really fast and it's a DSLR, so it has those features that I need. I just got a film camera the other day that I'm going to start using. I like switch through cameras a lot, but I own a few.
Okay. Can you talk to me about your photography project with Tarek Touré?
Yeah, absolutely. So Tarek, we went to high school together.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. And he was an athlete, played football. When I got there in 2000, and I want to say five, I got there in 2005, he was a junior. And I remember him and the other juniors saying, you know, when the seniors leave, we're going to win this championship. We're going to win. When they left, they won. Like, they did a phenomenal job. And that's an unordinary thing for high school students in the inner city at Emerson to beat all these schools, beat county schools, schools that have the resources, you know, and kind of they won a champ. Yeah, they won a championship. They played at the Raven Stadium and it was great. And I remembered him because I remember just having so much the time of my life in high school. So we never spoke or anything, but I knew who he was. He was a pretty quiet guy. He didn't really say too much. Then we went to the same college. Mm-hmm. He also played football, but I didn't know him that well, so we still really didn't talk. But he had a few ideas that he wanted to bring my way. He wanted me to do the photography. And I'm like, yeah, cool. But those ideas were just, they just stayed ideas. We worked together a little bit, but not a lot. Then he wound up asking me to take some photos of him. And I confided in him a lot because he's a genius. Like, he's like a walking library. He can pull out like facts and statistics and definitions and quotes and poems. And he just pulls it out of his head. And I need that in my life, you know, like he adds a perspective to my life that I don't really have. So we talk a lot and I always take photos of him. He always comes for me for that. But it's crazy because one of the photos that's in the front of the book I took at a museum, and he was like, this looked like it could be a book cover or something. And I was just like, one day. And I just remember, you know, I'm always shooting. I always share my stuff with him and he's always writing. So he wound up saying, you know, I need some photos for a book. And I was just like, all right. So I just sent him like basically everything that I had. And he went through and included my work as well as Kyle's. And it was my first time meeting Kyle. I didn't know Kyle until like after the book.
That's Kyle, you know, project.
Yep. After okay. the book project. So it was just like, hey, I need some stuff. All right, cool. I didn't read anything. So I was wondering like, well, how are we going to do this? But I just like, whatever, I'll send you everything and you can choose from there and blah, blah, blah. He was giving me the information on the book here and there. And I always take photos of him. So I follow him around and go to his speaking engagements where he's just spitting those poems. And I'm like, yeah, I can't wait for this to come out because what you delivering right now to me is just so good. So
yeah.
I was excited about that. But the exhibit happened because Jermaine is he has a fellowship at Impact Hub.
Yeah.
And one thing that I like to let people know is that Impact Hub is basically a result of gentrification in Baltimore. Impact Hub is global, but we didn't have one in Baltimore, and that they use the old theater. They haven't been open that long. So Jermaine has a fellowship there. He likes to make the place as black as possible while he can, and he does. So he was like, yeah, we're going to have the event here. Let's just turn it into a small exhibit. And I was just
That's the D. Watkins Tarek Ture.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, you know, why not? Let's do that. So we went through, got some black and white photos. He used all black and white photos. I sent him some colored. Some of those photos, I think maybe about two photos is actually colored, but he just used them black and white. So we just kept everything black and white, and we had the exhibit, and then we had the event, which I met you there, and it was awesome. I was thankful that he did that because it just allowed me to be in a book. But the best thing about it is that the feedback we've been getting from people, like a middle school, I think in New York, ordered like 100 books.
Wow.
And my favorite is that it's an AP English class from Emerson, which is an inner city zone school that don't read books that they want to read or books that they can relate to. They read stuff like Beowulf and
Huckleberry Finn.
Yeah, Ben Carson's memoir and stuff like that. So it's like they ordered some books, I think 25 books for their English class. And that to me was just a blessing because it's like, yo, like we writing about our lives and we're trying to get y'all to also write about y'all lives and express yourself and tell y'all stories because it's critical for black people to tell their own story. So hopefully it inspires them to do so. So I think that was the best thing. The best outcome for me, you know, just that the kids from Emerson and all other kids are able to now read something that I've contributed to and something that Tark put his heart and soul into. So it was great.
It was a great process all around.
Absolutely. It was pretty easy. He had a little stress getting the book made. I think he wanted the cover to be matte, I believe. But other than that, it was a pretty easy process. It was fun too.
Gotcha. So out of your entire photography career, what's your favorite photo?
That I took or?
Yes.
I actually don't have that many photos that are my favorite. It's hard for me to judge my own work.
yeah.
Seriously, I look at some of my stuff and I'd be like,
what was I thinking?
Yeah, what is this, you know? But
yeah, I got you. I don't even really listen to the podcast after I release it. Like, this is me listening to it now, but then once I edit it down and release it, I'll never listen to it again, or I'll listen like 5 minutes of it and I'm like, so that's what I sound like? Okay.
True. I do have this one photo that I took, and it's actually a part of the exhibit. It's called Letter to My Unborn Child, and it's also, I wrote something with it. And along with the title is this lyric that I say, it's hard to face this world this cold world on a good day, when will they let the little kids in the hood play? And that's a Tupac lyric. And then Letter to My Unborn Child is also the name of a Tupac song. It's like one of my favorite songs. So the photo, it's a black and white photo. So with black and white, you can have black and white or you can have black and gray. But black and gray is still considered black and white because it doesn't have any color. But the black, it depends on how dark the black is and how white the white is, if that makes sense. So it's like, it's a black and white photo, but it's particularly like black and gray in a way. And it's this kid. It was at a rally downtown during the Porter trial. And I remember this kid being there. And I like taking photos of kids. They just speak volumes to me. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to try to use him as a muse and everything. And nothing that I do is staged. So I didn't talk to him or anything like that. I kind of hugged him and stuff, but I interacted with him, but I didn't tell him to pose or anything. And he had a sign at first. So I got some photos of him and a sign, but then he put his hood on. He put his hoodie on. He put his hood on. He folded his arms and I kind of kneeled down a little and I took the photo. So the photo is him in the middle, folding his arms with his hood on, which is very iconic to me because we all know what hoodies do, what that means. And beside him is a fist balled up of a man. And then behind him is these two women talking. And between the man and the women is this like protester all the way in the back. You can't really tell, but you can tell it's a person. And then on the other side, it's another person. So it's like he's surrounded by all of this chaos. You know, not even people don't even know that it was during a rally, during a protest. But he's surrounded by, you know, a balled up fist, women talking behind him. He's just standing there with his arms folded and his hood on. And I like that photo a lot because I just connected with it. Like it was expression to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm big on hoods. I like hoodies a lot and I like wearing my hood. I like having stuff on my head.
Yeah.
So I was able to relate to this photo. So I just kind of got inspired and I wrote something up. And then I love that song so much. And so what I wrote, Letter to My Unborn Child, is just like a little passage. But it's basically a letter from a mother talking to her unborn child. And it's just about it's just about the world, you know, about the difficulties he's going to face and everything. So, yeah.
Okay. So do you have any upcoming projects? What are you working on now? Is there anything you can talk about?
So right now I'm just like in the creative process of trying to get as much work as I can for this exhibit I have coming up in May. Just an art exhibit.
Where is it going to be at?
I haven't even started like any okay, of that. Like okay. I think I'm so caught up on trying to satisfy what I want in it, because I have this vision of what it's going to be. So I'm trying to, you know, photograph certain environments and, you know, have different types of imagery there. So I've really just been doing the work, haven't really even figured out where I want it to be. I have a few places in mind, but it is going to be in Baltimore for sure. And I do know that we will have performers. It's like when you get one of us, you get all of us. So you get me, you get Tark too, you get Muhammad, you get so many people that perform.
Who's Muhammad?
Muhammad is our friend. He's a spoken word artist. He just won a poetry slam. He is the truth. Like,
okay,
he's the truth. So it's like when you get one of us, you get all of us. But I do have an exhibit coming up. I'm actually working on my site now. It's just been so much going on that I haven't had any time to do anything. I work for the Afro. I do a lot of work with them, the Afro-American newspaper.
Photographies for them?
Yep, and okay. I write a few articles for them too. Right now I'm working on a Humans of New York type of series for them, but it's based on people who were affected by the uprising. So I'm working on that right now, and I'm very big on journalism, you know, like, because I see the so-called journalism that's happened today, and I don't want to be a replica of that. So I'm really trying to get real stories from different perspectives, you know, not just protesters, not just kids and families, but police officers, firemen, you know, people who profession is to respond to these type of cases. So I'm working on that, and that should be out in the April 27th edition
of the Afro.
Yep, of the Afro. besides that, I'm just out shooting, working. I don't really have any like speaking engagements or anything coming up. I just had one past Women of Color, like on the front lines of activism and art, at Columbia Law School. The other day went really well. I spoke there just about my work. Everybody was really responsive, and the other artists were really good. Everybody, the panel was wonderful. I learned a lot, and it was great to be able to express myself and relate to other women, you know, because the activism world, we have those type of oppressions too. Men, women, you know, so it's like it's slightly divided as well. So to be in that atmosphere felt really good, and to be amongst people who don't know me and for them to say certain things about my work was inspiring and encouraging. So yeah, so right now, just the series for the paper and definitely the exhibit for sure.
Now, how can people look at your stuff online or get in contact with you on social media?
I have stuff everywhere. I have like Tumblr pages full of stuff. I have like stuff on my Instagram. I tweet photos here and there. I do a lot of my like journalism work on Twitter just to keep people up to date with what's going on. Well, on Instagram and Twitter, I am _ Yoshann, Yoshann. My Tumblr page is, what is it? I believe it's vanguard.tumblr, VANGAWD, Tumblr.com. I put a lot of my work on Instagram though, just because it's right there, and I'm working on the site right now, so I got stuff everywhere. And I'm really active on my social media, so that's how people can get in touch with me.
Gotcha. All right. This is unrelated. I just got one more question. Mm-hmm. Does my hair look okay? It's been getting really long. I don't know if I should cut it or not. Does it look okay?
It looks fine. Let me see the back. Turn your head.
Okay.
Yes, it looks fine. I actually like that. Like, it's a little matted in the back, but it looks fine. It looks fine. Don't brush it or anything. It looks fine. And you got the like beard stuff going on.
Yeah, and I need it to connect by the time I'm 30, or else I'm gonna be upset.
It looks fine. Your hair looks fine.
Okay.
Let me see. I want to touch your hair. Yes, your hair looks fine. It's nice.
All right. I
know if you comb it out though.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to have like a Absol type of like fro thing.
Absol is an afro now?
He wears his hair out sometimes. It's not like an afro, but he wears it out.
Oh,
and it's
okay.
It looks like an afro, mm-hmm. but it's not an afro.
Gotcha.
Your hair looks fine.
All right. Thank you.
The beard, you'll get there. You're not that far. You got a lot going on.
I know, but I know this is so dumb, but I just want it because all my friends have it, and I just want it so my little sister will stop making fun of me.
No, I think beards are totally cool.
Oh yeah,
I would have a beard if I was a man. I would have a beard. As a woman, I wouldn't want one.
Yeah, okay.
But I think beards are really, really cool.
Well, to the women out there who do have beards or do want beards, you know, you're still loved.
Yeah, I mean, I got a few chin hairs that it's like annoying. I'm really hairy.
Okay.
You know, too much information, but I'm really hairy and I get chin hairs. So,
gotcha.
Yeah, I don't want it to go into a beard though. I don't think that I can handle that much pressure.
Gotcha. All right. Well, Shannon, thanks for sitting
down.
Thank
you.
Thank you for the hair confidence as well. I'll keep going.
You are styling and profiling.
Local Color is written, edited, hosted, directed, and engineered by me, Jason V. Local Color's website was designed using the Morning WordPress theme, with website hosting provided by Skylar Newman. Media hosting is provided by Blueberry Podcasting. Visit blubrry.com to learn more. Local Color's theme music is by Dame Funk and was provided with permission by Stone's Throw Records. I'm Jason V, and I'll be back with more Local Color.